Hello, just before we get started with the podcast, I just want to say a massive thank you to Beast Gear, who are our sponsors. Evertonians can get 10% off all fitness equipment by using Toffees10 at the checkout on www.beastgear.co.uk. So get over and check it out and let us know what you think.
And now Horn. Stewart wants it. And looks for Emma Catchy!
It's a grand old team to support. And if you know your history, it's enough to make your heart go whoa.
Hello and welcome back to the Grand Old Team podcast. I'm Adam Partington. Another depressing away defeat for Everton at Burnley. How long will Big Sam actually last? Cenk Tosun plays all right and scores in the cold. Who'd have thought it? And could we be chanting follow, follow, follow again next season? All that and more in this week's edition of the Grand Old Team podcast. So hello and welcome back to the Grand Old Team podcast. I am Adam Partington and I'm joined by Mikey from the forum. Everton, obviously, as you will well be aware now, many of you will have watched the game, some of you will have been at the game. It was a poor second half performance. Mikey, thanks for coming on to the Grand Old Team podcast again, mate. This is the third time you've been on now?
I think it is the third time, yeah.
There you go, third time. You're an up-and-coming star within the Grand Old Team podcast ranks. You're obviously a well-rounded professional.
I've got my wings.
Well, yeah, you say that, but you've always been a frequent guy on the forum, haven't you? So this is just kind of bedding you into. I think this would more be like giving you a run out in the reserves. I think the forum's the main team. You know what I mean? You're just getting a little run out in the reserves tonight. So how do you feel?
It's
about
It's the first
that?
Few steps in my my burgeoning media career.
Yes, there you go. That's what it is. You're retired. Well, mind you, you're not a retired pro from the forum, because I imagine you'll be pretty proactive on there for a while. But anyway, the point I'm making in a rather silly way is many people will know you from the forum. So yeah, we've got a lot to talk about, a lot of moaning to do. It would be lovely to do a podcast. Maybe next season I'll be able to do a podcast where we'll only be able to talk about happy and nice things. That would be very novel. But then again, this is Everton, and that I don't think that if I'd have been doing a podcast for like 20 years, we'd have struggled to find one episode where everything we have said would be good. So yeah, let's start then. Yesterday, initial thoughts on the lineup, Mikey. Were you when you saw that and you saw Tosun in and you know it, the way it was being reported by the official Twitter account and everywhere else online and Sky Sports, we're kind of going, you know, we were going to go with the two up front and you know, I was a bit sceptical about that, and it turned out that wasn't the case. You know, obviously Calvert-Lewin was pushed out onto the left hand side there. But what were your initial thoughts when you saw the lineup, mate? Can you remember how you felt?
I was cautiously optimistic, I think, when I saw it. I didn't think it was that bad of a team. I suppose the thing is, it's not so much the players, but how they actually play when they get on the pitch, isn't it? And you can pick any lineup that we've got at the moment right now, and doesn't matter who you're really picking, when they get on the pitch, they've got to actually, you know, put the effort in and try and do it. And but no, my first impression on seeing it was, I thought, oh, that's an all right team. You know, obviously, I'm on record as not being a particular big fan of Martina, but he's played well, I thought. Anyway, I thought he did all right in the last couple of games. At least, you know, he wasn't the most at fault for things that went wrong. And yeah, I mean, the only thing I saw was like, oh, we're not starting Rooney. All right, but
yeah,
aside from that,
yeah. What about did you anticipate that Leighton Baines might come in though for Martina? I thought that was going to happen this week.
Well, it was interesting because he was on the bench, wasn't he? And last week, Garbutt actually made the bench for Watford, didn't he, as well? So when I saw that, I was thinking, oh, maybe he's thinking of a change. So maybe this week it will be. It'll be one of Garbutt or Baines on the bench, or maybe one of them will start. But it seems like he's going to try and ease Baines in, which is probably the right thing to do, really, because I think Seamus had that. He came back, didn't he? He had that very good game, and then he missed a week, didn't he? And he was back at the weekend, so maybe it's better just to, rather than throwing Baines straight back in, give him a chance to maybe build some fitness, maybe bring him on in off the bench against Brighton, maybe, and you know, and try maybe then maybe give him the full 90 against Stoke.
Yeah,
maybe that'd be the sensible way of doing it.
Yeah, it will. I can't wait to see him back, to be honest. And I know we kind of romanticise players when they're away. I had this yesterday on the forum. I had people talking about how we've got this desperate need for Funes Mori. And I was like, do we all remember what we used to say about Funes Mori before he got his injury? But fair enough. But I think with Leighton, obviously, there was a few criticisms with him at the start of the season when he performed quite poorly. But I think we all admit that, you know, we do want the club to, you know, to try and identify a left-back to come in and replace him as a future replacement. I think we spoke about that last time you were on. But I think the point I'm making is we all accept that he is a far better proposition than Martina, even though Martina is played slightly better than he was before.
Well, he's got a left foot, hasn't he?
Exactly.
I mean, Martina hasn't got a left foot. I mean, I when I used to play when I was at primary school and going into secondary school, I used to be a left back. I'm right footed, but I used to be the left back. And the main reason I was a left back is because there was no one else. No one on the team was left footed. There was one player who was left footed on the team, but he was insistent on playing on the right wing, so we couldn't use him as left back. And it was basically like, right, we've got no one to play left back. Mikey, go play left back. So, and then I used to do the thing that he always does where I was, because I had no left foot at all. I'm one of the worst footballers you'll ever see to begin with anyway. But I'm also one of the most one-footed footballers you'll ever see. So I used to always have to run, stop, turn onto my right, and then cross it. So it took me like about 5 seconds to put a cross in. And I watch Martino, and he's exactly the same. He has, you know, except for that one assist he got, that amazing assist he got against, was it Leicester, where he crossed it? He crossed it with his left foot to Nias, who headed in, which is the rarest Everton goal you'll ever get.
Yeah.
That left footed from Martino to Nias. But yeah, he's just not left footed. And, you know, so Baines is a step up, if only because he's got a left foot. And also, I suppose he's the penalty taker, isn't he, as well? So he's got that in his favour. I'm just surprised that Garbett hasn't had a chance like at all, because for a while there Martina was really stinking the joint out.
He was,
and you know, I'm not having a go at him. It's not his fault. He's playing out of position. That's an absolute, you know, it's a crap position to be in if you're a footballer. You know, playing out of position, and when you're already, your confidence must already be low. But I just thought, I think it says more about Garbett than it does about Martina that Garbett didn't get a chance really at sort of any point. And now Baines is back, you'd have to think that Garbett's going to go even further down the pecking order.
Yeah, it doesn't look good for him, because as you're saying there, you know, the way how poorly Martina was playing before Christmas, and we had the issue before January where, you know, it was out of necessity that we had to play Martina because there weren't too many other options. And now, you know, Garbett's come on the scene, you know, you thought that he would slot into. Yeah, you're dead right, actually. And incidentally, Garbett wasn't on the bench for the Burnley game at all. So,
no.
You know what I mean? I would think this was his last chance saloon at Everton now. And I've got a feeling he'll probably be moved on in the summer, Garbett, but who knows? But yeah,
it's a shame that, isn't it? Because when he played in the Europa League for us, he actually seemed like there was something there, but he just...
Yeah, was it the Wolfsburg game? Mikey, no, he was exceptional. Which game was it?
Because he played against... Because I remember we put the kids out against Krasnodar, didn't we? And I think he played in that game. But did he play in the league a bit as well when Baines got injured or something?
Yeah, because he had quite a good rep within the fan base. You know, we talked quite highly of him. It wasn't for long. But at one point, you know, he was quite well thought of. But in terms of the game yesterday, you know, I thought that Everton started a bit slow for the first 5 to 10, and then when we got going, we looked quite dangerous, especially on the counter as well. With the pace, you know, the likes of Walcott, you know, he showed that quite a bit, and you know, I thought, and then when we got ourselves ahead as well, and we'll talk about Cenk Tosun in a second, but you know, I thought this is, if we can get ourselves in front in a game like this, you know, you kind of know what you're getting from Burnley. You know they're going to be direct, and if you can manage that, then you can pretty much, I think, nullify them. But you know, we just obviously as the second half kicked off, that didn't happen. But so you know, in terms of the game when we went 1-0 up, were you first of all, how chuffed were you for Cenk Tosun to get that goal, especially after the fact that we were told that he couldn't play in the cold?
Well, I mean, I was very happy for him because I think he's been written off so quickly, hasn't he? If you go onto the Fred and Grandville team, the amount of people who are queuing up just to say that he's not any good and he's this and he's that. And it's like he's played like 5 minutes for us. Do you know what I mean? Really, in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, let's face it, we've not got the best manager in the world, have we? So it's perfectly reasonable to think that, you know, give him some time to settle in, get an actual football manager managing the club. And who knows, he might still come good. So I think it's a bit early to write him off. And I've been rooting for him. I really have been rooting for him. And I was chuffed to see him score. And he also, that goal seemed to really mean a lot to him as well. When he was walking back to the halfway line and he was sort of looking at the away end and sort of punching the air and sort of saying, it felt like he finally got the monkey off his back. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And it was really good. And the thing was, in the first half as well, there were a couple of times where we could have scored as well. Like, I mean, Walcott had a really good chance. I was sitting there and thinking, you know, we've had some good chances this half. We've not taken them, but we had them. And, you know, Cenk's just scored. And, you know, I was feeling, at half-time, I was feeling some pretty optimistic. And then, of course, we went on to Everton in the second half. But yeah, I would say with Cenk, don't write him off yet would be what I'd say. I'd say just give him some time. You know, he might not come good. You know, I'm not ruling that out. You can never tell, can you? Because he's come from a different league. But just give him a bit of time to find his feet. He's not got his sea legs yet. So give him a chance to find them and then maybe reserve judgment for him next season. For the rest of the season now, let's just let him try and get some form together, try and get some minutes, try and adapt to the league, and then we'll see where we are next season.
I think it kind of symbolises the modern-day football fan. There's a thread on Grand Old Team, and there's a lot of people on there, as you say, drawing conclusions on him already. I mean, what you've got to remember is with this guy is he's come from Besiktas. The Besiktas fans absolutely adore him. So that alone says... you know, a few of them have appeared on the site as well. But look, you know, that in itself... shows you that, you know, he's obviously got something about him for a fan base. You know, it's not like he's come from Forest Green Rovers. You're like, you know what I mean? He's come from Besiktas. He's played in the Champions League this season. He's absolutely adored by their supporters, and he's joined Everton at potentially one of the worst times you could join this football club as a footballer. You mentioned it. You know, you mentioned Allardyce, and this is a really tough time for anybody to join. There's a good chance as well. Remember, Mikey, that Allardyce had little influence over his signing. That was probably set up in advance. So he's probably come in and thought, well, the manager hasn't brought me here. You know what I mean? And I've come to a new country. I've come to a new culture in terms of, you know, both on and off the pitch. And I've got to try and work things out. A new club, a new challenge. And I've got this price tag. You know what I mean? All these things kind of coming together, they equal, it's going to take you a bit of time to get going. So the fact that there are people out there already willing to pass judgment on him, it really wears me down as a modern day football fan.
It is, yeah, but I think me and you, we're slightly, we sort of grew up in the 90s watching football, didn't we?
Mm.
So I think it's more the sort of the younger set who are a bit more now when it comes to football, and they are like, they want everything right now, and there's no real sense of patience or time. Whereas I think people, you know, our generation slightly and older have a bit more of an appreciation for the fact that sometimes, you know, things do take time. You're not going to sign every player and they're going to hit the ground running straight away. You know, sometimes you will. Sometimes you'll bring a player straight in and they'll be amazing and it'll be great. And other times, you'll bring a player in, it'll take him a while. The perfect example I always point to is Fellaini.
Mm.
Like, if anyone remembers when Fellaini first came in, he took him a while.
I do,
like,
yeah.
When he first came in, because he was a record signing, but was it 15 million for Fellaini? And I think that was the transfer record at the time, our transfer record, and we broke it to sign him. And people were saying, he's rubbish, this Fellaini. He's crap. He's always, you know, we've wasted all that money. And then he ended up becoming an incredibly important player for us. And it's just, if you come from a different league, sometimes you've just got to get used to the league and get ease yourself in. Sometimes you're just not going to hit the ground running. And Fellaini did it again at Man United. You know, he didn't start out very well there. And, you know, the fact that he's still there after all these managers, and these managers keep picking him, I think tells us all you need to know, doesn't it, really, about him as a player. You know, some players are slow starters. Some players just aren't great from the off.
Yeah,
You know, it's interesting you...
No, carry on.
No, I was just saying, it's interesting, your interview with Tony Cotty last week, when he was saying that he came in and his first game, he scored a hat-trick, and then suddenly he set this ridiculous bar for himself that he always felt he was struggling to live up to. And I think, you know, sometimes maybe it's better to start slow and build at pace, because, you know, it's just like people, the fans get to see you on that journey and get to sort of live that journey with you. And sometimes I think that's a good thing, and I think it's good for building a bond between the player and the fan base. It's just, again, I think it's just the younger fans kind of expect everything to be brilliant right from the start, and then sometimes it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, another case in point is probably Umar Nias in terms of building that rapport with the fan base after a bit of a struggle. I mean, you know, there was a lot more to Nias in the sense that the stories that came out around him and Koeman and what have you. But you know, it's a similar kind of story in a shorter time, a longer time frame. On that generational thing, that's a really interesting point. And where do you think that cutoff is, Mikey? Because obviously, me and you are roughly, I think, of a similar age. Have you hit the big three?
We're mid-90s, aren't we?
Yeah. Have you hit that big three?
I'm 30 now. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was 30 in October, yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I've still got a year or two to go. But the point, where do you think that cutoff is? And, like, is it anybody under, like, the age of 23, 24 now has maybe a little bit more of an instant?
I think it'll be people who have grown up in the Moyes era, I would say. So any people who don't remember Walt Smith and don't remember Mike Walker and don't remember that sort of period. I think if you grew up in the Moyes era, you'll have grown up by and large with an Everton team who were, you know, if they were usually in the top half, usually, you know, given a lot of the big teams a bully nose at home, and you kind of would expect that from Everton, and you would expect that sort of standard. So now at this point right now, which is basically we've gone back to the Walter Smith era, haven't we? Really, I mean Allardyce and Walter Smith. It's not like there's that much difference between those teams, and it's kind of like for these people who grew up with Moyes, it's a bit of a culture shock. Whereas for us, we've kind of been there before, you know. So it's, I think that would probably be the cut off point. If you were, say, coming early noughties, I'd say if you were starting to really watch Everton and really sort of follow it from early noughties onwards, you're probably in that group who expects everything to happen right away. Whereas if you were old enough to have been around in the 90s and seen us how bad we were in the 90s with some of those teams, you'll probably have a greater understanding for the grey of life, because that's what life mostly is. Life isn't black, it's not white, it's usually just a lot of grey. And if you're an Everton fan and you grew up in the 90s, you're used to a lot of grey.
Yeah, but with that said though, you know, the generation before us who saw the magnificent teams of the 80s, you know, the 85,
they saw Andy Gray
and stuff. They did, literally saw Andy Gray. They don't, maybe it's just an age thing. I was going to say they don't seem to react in the same way as the younger generation, but that's probably just wisdom of being older. Do you know what I mean? Like, or in the 90s, I wonder if like they kicked off as much as... Well, okay, let me put it this way. I wonder how much the 90s hurt those guys, you know what I mean, that had been exposed to those terrific teams of the 80s. The 90s must have been a proper, like, you know what I mean, you're back down
to earth ultimate come down
with a bang. Yeah. I don't know. But just going back to the whole kind of drawing a conclusion on a player early doors, I mean, there's no other walk of life that you would do that either. It's like, I've just started a new job, I've been in it about 4 weeks now, but it's kind of like someone expecting me to know absolutely everything about the company within like about 3 or 4 days. You'd be like, well, hold on, mate, I've only just got here, like let me work things out. You know what I mean? It's a similar kind of thing, and it is rather depressing. You know, that people do pass judgment like that. But I thought he was decent too. So I thought that I was a little bit disappointed when he came off as well. I understood the introduction of Nias, but what was strange, the most strangest thing to me about the Burnley game was how Calvert-Lewin managed to stay on for the whole 90 minutes. Was that one of the worst performances you've seen from him?
Yeah, I mean, I think he was trying to do too much, wasn't he? There was a bit at the end where he had the ball and he could have passed to Bolasie, couldn't he, I think it was, and he ended up decided to keep running and have a go himself. And, you know, he put in some late challenges and he was lucky to stay on the pitch at some points because he was making some pretty rash challenges. And, yeah, it wasn't a great game for him. But to be fair, he's not been playing a lot recently, has he, as well? So it's kind of like we were throwing them in cold. And, you know, it's just... I don't know. I mean, he's not... Let's face it, I like Calvert-Lewin, but he's not a winger, is he?
No.
He's not a winger. He's
a front-two,
man. He can do it
in
a pinch. Yeah, he is. I mean, I'd love us to play 4-4-2. I say this every time I come on the show. It makes me sound like a right curmudgeon, but I'd love us to play 4-4-2.
A curmudgeon.
You can play 4-4-2.
Do you know what? Wait. You just said the best word ever on this podcast, a curmudgeon. I don't even know what it means, but I love it. What's it mean?
A curmudgeon is basically someone who's like sort of dull and sort of like, I like things a certain way and just sort of like bland and grumpy and that sort of thing. And that's what, and I do feel like a bit of commotion because I'm sitting there going like, oh, 4-4-2, it's a great, and because you can't say it in the modern world now, you can't, saying you're like 4-4-2 is like saying you like Carry On films. It's like, or you like Roger Moore, James Bond films. You know what I mean? It's like, or you like watching The Good Life. It's just one of those things where it's just, where it's sort of like, oh, he likes 4-4-2. What stuffy bastard he must be. He likes 4-4-2. We've moved on from 4-4-2, Grandad. But it's like, 4-4-2 doesn't have to be a boring formation. I mean, if you do 4-4-2, you can have a flexible 4-4-2, especially with Walcott. Because if we're playing two strikers and have Walcott on the wing, you know, we can move Walker up during the game and it, suddenly it's a 4-3-3. You can have a flexible 4-4-2 that moves around and you can have two strikers. And, you know, you can play maybe Tosin and Nias together, or you can play Calvert-Lewin and Tosin together as a strike force. You can even play Walker as a striker as you want. And again, if Walker needs to, he can move back out to the wing maybe or move a bit deeper and suddenly it goes to a 4-5-1. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with 4-4-2, especially if you try and do a 4-4-2 diamond, which we've got the perfect team for. You know, you can have Garner at the bottom of the diamond, you can have, you know, Davis or Rooney at the top of it, and we've got Walcott on one wing, maybe Bolasie on the other or Sigurdsson on the other. You can play Sigurdsson at the top of the diamond.
Yeah. Well,
you can play Rooney at the bottom of the diamond and play Sigurdsson at the top of the diamond. You know, genuinely 4-4-2 is the reason why 4-4-2 has been so enduring and so successful over the years is because it's flexible. You can move from 4-4-2 to another formation like that. You really can. You don't. 4-4-2 is this sort of stigma of being like a really rigid formation that you can't do anything with. And you can do loads with 4-4-2. A 4-4-2 can become a 4-3-3 or a 4-5-1 or even a 4-2-4, like in seconds if you've got the players for it. And I think we've got the players for it to play a 4-4-2. And like I say, if things are getting hairy, you can have you can take one of the strikers off and put another defender on, go 4-5-1. You can move things around. It's just, but anyway, this is a rant I've had numerous times with different people.
Well, it's a good rant. And you know what the irony of it is? Someone like Sam Allardyce, you'd expect him to be able to.
Do a 4-4-2.
Exactly. If there's any manager
on planet Earth who could do a 4-4-2, you think it'd be Sam Allardyce.
Sam fucking Allardyce would be that guy. And that's another thing with Allardyce as well, is his persistence to change things. I've said this before as well. I think I said it on the last podcast. And I think I said it to Cotty. You know, here's the thing with Allardyce. When Allardyce came in, I expected and I assumed that the criticism that he would be getting now would be, does he know how to do anything else? You know what I mean? And you would get to the ground and you would know every game, you would know who was going to play for us barring injury. He'd have a settled back four. We'd know exactly, you know what we were going to do and how we were going to play. And it would be horrendous, but we'd be grounding out results now. We'd probably be in eighth. We'd be nicking 1-0. That's what I expected. And I expected people, the conversation we'd all be having, Mikey, would... Oh, is it going to get to a point where he's going to get us into a really comfortable position, and the board are going to go, do you know what, let's stick with him. Because, do you know, that would be the fear, like, that we'd all have. We'd be like, oh, he's turned it around, and although it's not pretty, he's getting these results. You know what I mean? And we're just kind of, it's horrendous to watch, and we go in front and we sit in, and that's it. But you, so anyway, I've gone on a bit of a rant about Allardyce there, but I do know what
I'd
you
love
mean.
That right. I'll tell you what, I'd love that right now. If we were playing crap football but getting results, I'd be like in Hog Kevin right now compared to where we are, because we're playing crap football and we're not even winning.
Well, you say that, you know, and that's, I mean, that shows you as a supporter is, and I'd be the same, because I want Everton to win football matches. But you know full well that if we were doing that, there would just be just as many people kicking off.
Like, well, do you know what? I don't give a fuck what they think. Seriously, well, I don't.
Can I just clarify? Mikey, just clarify. No, nobody listen. We all care what you think who are listening to this podcast. Anybody who doesn't listen to the podcast, though, that's applicable to you. Carry on.
No, I just want to say, like, obviously, I just, this whole sort of thing of, it's like, you support Everton, you should want Everton to win. So long as we're not cheating, I don't want us to cheat. I want us to win fairly within the rules. But if that means we put 11 men behind the ball and nick a 1-0, fuck it, we won. Do you know what? We won. I don't go to the match to be entertained. I'm sorry, I don't. Entertainment is a nice byproduct that we get sometimes if we're playing really well. You know, I mean, like, I'm not opposed to Everton playing entertaining football. It's preferable for Everton to play entertaining football than for us to win football matches. If that is the perfect combination, and I'm happy with that. But if someone says to me, you can have results, but you can't have the good football, I'll say, fine, I'll take the results. You know what I mean? It's just, I often think that this, I don't, this is an exaggeration. So I'm saying this right away, right now. This is an exaggeration on my part, and I'm grouping some people into it who don't deserve to be grouped into it. And I admit it's me making a generalization. But I generally think that if you go to the match, by and large, so long as the team win, you're going to be more happy than if you're watching it at home and it's crap football. But from my experience, people who go to the match, yeah, they want to see good football, and yeah, they will kick off if it's crap. But if the team win in the end, they'll be somewhat satisfied. Whereas if you're not at the match and you're watching it somewhere else, you will linger more on the fact that the match was rubbish, because you're not there. You're in a pub, or you're at home, or you're doing something else, and you're watching it on your phone while you're shopping or whatever. And there isn't that. When you're actually in the ground and when you're there, you're feeling it viscerally, the match, you just, You'll take a crappy 1-0 so long as you win. Really, really will. You're far more inclined to be happy with it. And I think it's a big disconnect from people who go and people who don't.
Yeah.
I think if you went to most people at the match and quizzed them and said, right, what will you take today? You'll take a great game where we lose 3-2, or a really crappy game where we win 1-0. And I reckon 95% of people there will say, oh, I'll take the 1-0, please.
I think you're onto something, mate. I genuinely do, and I've known it from my own experiences as well in the past, with periods where I've not been able to go because of work or financials, and periods where I go frequently, like now. For example, you know, me and the old fellow will walk out of the ground, and if it's not been great but we've won, we'll say, ah, it wasn't fantastic, they wasn't, but at least we've won. You know what I mean? And you'll kind of get in your car and you'll be like, well, you know, it's made me Saturday. Everton have got the 3 points. So I do think you're onto something. I think when you're there as well, you've got a lot of other things to keep you entertained. And remember, though, because you, as you say, you're emotionally involved in the match. It's going on in front of you. You're surrounded by your tribe as well. But when you've got to think how it's built as well on the telly, is it's all focused around entertainment. That's how Sky package it up. And it's all, you know, the glitz and the glamour of the Premier League on your telly. So I do think you're onto something. And I think there probably is a marked difference. And that's not like a slight on anybody who can't make the match, because there are Evertonians who listen to this who live in different countries, you know, who
oh yeah,
you are right. Here's the thing, Mikey, like in anything in life, you are completely making a generalisation.
Not having a go, what I said, I was making a generalisation.
You did make, no, absolutely. Just to caveat what you said, you made a generalisation, but it's a generalisation that you have to make, and it is a fair one. We understand there are individuals and exceptions to the rule, but it's common sense. When you are at the match, of course you are more inclined to be happy with the win, because you've had to invest a lot more to get there. Remember, you've had to invest your financials, you've had to invest your time, you know, the effort. So, you know, you're kind of like, well, okay, it wasn't fantastic, but at least we got the points. Whereas when, as you say, when you're sitting at home on the settee, maybe you've got a bit more of a like, okay, well, I want to be entertained because I'm watching this in Italian. You've got also as well, mate, you've got like, you know, the pundits, you can hear them and they're influencing your thoughts as well. And they'll quite frequently sit there and go, oh, this is, you know, it's not very good, or this hasn't been the best game. I mean, you know, they say things like that quite frequently. So yeah, you're probably onto something, mate. You are onto something. And I'm with you, you know, I want Everton to win
football. And I do want to point it as well.
Go on.
I would like to say as well, just regards out, I'm not having a go at the people who don't go to the match, by the way, either. The only time I'm ever be annoyed at someone who doesn't go to the match is when they have a go at the fans who do. So, like, for example, during the Martinez days, certainly during the ending of the Martinez days, the atmosphere at Goodison wasn't the best because we were playing crappy sideways passing football and doing absolutely nothing. And we were losing, or we were giving away leads, or it was just the atmosphere was just really flat in the ground. And the amount of people who were queuing up who hadn't gone to slag the people off who did go, look, it's fine if you don't, if you're not going to the match, then hey, look, there's lots of reasons why you wouldn't, lots of valid reasons, so fair enough. But just don't have a go at the people who do, because regardless of whether you agree with them or you like what they're doing or not, they've put down the money, they paid money to the club to go, that money goes back into the club's coffers, they've paid for their ticket. Just don't be a dick to people who go when the match is shit and the crowd aren't reacting because the match is shit. Just don't have a go at the people who have gone to the match, please. Because at least they've gone to the fucking match. Yeah, and there have been lots of times during the past 25 years where going to the match has been a chore. Trust me, going to the match has been an absolute chore. But people have kept going. Yeah. And Brighton, it's sold out for Brighton.
Yeah,
we're playing arse awful football. We're in the bottom half. We're still realistically in a relegation battle, and yet we've sold out Brighton at home.
Yeah, it's incredible.
We've sold out. It's not Man United coming to town. It's not the derby. It's not, you know, a big game like Spurs. It's Brighton at home for a 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and we've sold it out. So the fans are doing their bit. It's just unfortunately the people running the club and the players on the pitch and the coaching staff aren't doing the job. The fans are doing as good as they can with the crap that's going on.
No, you're dead right.
Rant's over.
No, you've made a few good. You're being a proper. What was that word you used?
Curmudgeon.
A curmudgeon. That was a very. Curmudgeon. You are being.
I've been a right grumpy sod.
You are. You're a curmudgeon.
You've caught me in rare form today. I think it's because I was I don't know. I mean, he drove all the way to Lancashire yesterday and froze my tits off, and we fucking lost again. Mm. And when we lost, Allardyce wouldn't even look at us when he was walking back into the dressing room, back through the tunnel. He was straight
Mikey.
Down that tunnel. Him and Sammy
Mikey.
Lee didn't even look at us.
Mikey, wait a second. Right, you mentioned Allardyce there, so you were at the match yesterday. I saw some videos of the away.
Unfortunately,
end.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw some videos of the away end, looked a bit toxic. This thing when Allardyce was walking off the pitch, and it looked like on the cameras, by the way, he was having a bit of a smirk. Anyway, what was the reaction to him, and how toxic did it get as the players left?
It was venomous, absolutely venomous. Not so much for the players. In particular, Jordan Pickford got a good ovation when he came over because it wasn't, you know, people were having a go at him for some of the goals. But, I mean, like that first goal, that's Keane more than Pickford. You know, the player base had a free shot on goal, and sometimes, you know, he made so many good saves before that that I think, you know, he was in credit by the time the game was over.
Yeah,
definitely. So he got applause. I think Coleman got a clap. Most of the players got clapped. It was really only the coaching staff who got mostly the main trio. So Allardyce, Lee, and Shakespeare, they got a bit of verbals, and obviously during the match there was some unsavory language thrown to Allardyce. And the funny thing was, the Burnley fans don't like Allardyce either because he used to manage Blackburn, didn't he? And okay. Bolton, who were both rivals. So they were getting stuck into Allardyce. And there was that incredible bit where both the Everton fans and the Burnley fans were all yelling at Allardyce at the same time. which was not... And I actually, you know, like there were people who were near me because I was quite near the Burnley fans. And the people around me, the Evertonians around me, were getting really annoyed and sort of like offering some of the Burnley fans out for fights and all this other sort of nonsense. Because they had no intention of following through with it. And I was like, I thought the Burnley fans were being completely fair. Like, I thought the Burnley fans were first class, to be honest. And I think that, you know, I didn't really feel any animosity to them at all.
No.
I think it was just, we were playing crap and they were enjoying themselves, and they've got every right to enjoy themselves.
How,
you know,
how did the away end react to Ashley Williams' red card? Did you realise what had happened? Was it your side or was it up the pitch?
It was down our end, wasn't it? It was down the end, because the Everton, during the second half, we were behind the goal that Everton were attacking.
Mm.
And it came from, I didn't even know what he'd done, to be honest. There was a bit of a hullabaloo, and then he was red carded, and I was like, what happened there? Was it like a free kick into the box or a corner or something? And then did he elbow someone? I've not watched it back. I couldn't spare to watch Match Today when I got in.
Yeah, he raised his, if I remember rightly, to be fair, I've only seen it the once because I've not watched the highlights back again, but they're just having a tussle and he just flips the elbow up. I think it was his elbow.
You think that enough?
Yeah. Oh, mate, yeah, it was one of them.
He thought, sod this, I'm going to get sent off.
The worst thing about it is, though, Mikey, is if he'd showed that much enthusiasm for their second fucking goal, then maybe we wouldn't have been in that position in the first place. And, you know, to wear the captain's armband, I mean, we've got to be careful because we do, like, absolutely adore Duncan Ferguson down the years for doing similar things. But I think there's a stark difference. But, yeah, you know, just to wear the captain's armband, you're trying to get back into the game. It's kind of last throw of the dice territory and then, you know, you've got a set piece and he just overreacted and the guy, to be fair, whoever it was marking him, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Woods or someone, they weren't even that, they were just holding him, do you know what I mean? It was almost like he's just petulant,
yeah.
he's just thrown his arm out.
I can understand the frustration.
Yeah, did he acknowledge the supporters as he left or did he just run off?
No, to be fair, he almost looked kind of like resigned to it. He just thought, oh, well, off I'm. He handed off the captain's armband and off he trotted. Yeah, it was just, and the most, I think was as well, I think, again, I don't, I'm not sure how close this was because everyone was standing up and it was, I kind of had, it was, I struggled to see it. But Sigurdsson had a chance at 1-1 that went wide and everyone reacted like it had gone in. I don't know if you've seen the video of it, how close it was. I think he hit it with his left foot and it went wide. And I, unfortunately, because everyone stood up at the same time, I didn't get a good enough look at it. At 1-1, if that goes in, it's one of those, isn't it, where you look at it, or if Walcott puts one of his chances away in the first half, maybe right now we're having a different conversation, or maybe we wouldn't. But,
yeah. Okay, so...
Yeah,
just...
especially when we went 2-1 down, that was when the high-level toxicity was reached.
Yeah,
let's just put it that way.
Fume
and
levels.
The fans were not best pleased of Mr. Allardyce.
Fume levels started to accelerate. In terms of Mr. Allardyce, then one final thing before we wrap up, mate. How long do you think that he's got?
He'll get to the end of the season at the very least. Mm. I think.
I think you're right.
And then I think he'll get sacked.
Yeah, I can't see why they would bin him between now and then, and I'm not even sure whether or not. Oh, this won't make me popular, but I'm not even sure whether or not it's even the right thing to do. I think you need two more wins, and then
it's not
going to
achieve anything, is it?
Not really. And then what you do if you sack him? You just put Unsworth back in, and I don't. If people have got extremely short memories, if they, you know, have forgotten about how that was going. So I'm just kind of like, look, just leave him there now. Let's get the two wins and then let's get to the summer. As soon as that whistle blows, you say, thanks, Sam, you kept us up. That's what you were expected to do. You've done it. Terrific. On you go. But yeah. what I would love to know is happening now is that Farhad Moshiri has identified his shortlist and already he's making contact and he's saying, what do you want? How will you achieve what you want to do? And you know what? Here's a big thing, and this is my little rant, Mikey. Whoever that is, the next manager, whether it be someone like Mikel Arteta, which is being thrown around now, or Francesca, however you say his name, who else are we? Silva, whoever it is, as supporters, we need to just literally take a step back and say, do you know what? As long as we can see a bit of direction, if things aren't going swimmingly, if we're sitting in 12th next season or whatever, you know, early doors and you know, we're a bit stuttery and he's trying to get things together, we can't be, you know what I mean? We've got to give the next guy a bit of time because there's only so many times as well you can keep on pointing at managers. You know, it is down to the squad and the players. Yeah. So that's what I think I want to see from whoever the next manager may be.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, yeah. I mean, I've already gone on the record as to who I want us to pick.
Who do you want,
I don't think
then?
We've got any chance of getting him, but Joachim Löw would be my pick.
Oh yeah, you like him, don't you? You wanted to do a podcast on him on separately.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Well, maybe. Yeah. When, we'll do one. You can tell us why he's so great. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've already put most of it on the forum. So if you want to go into the, I think it's either in the Allardyce thread or who should the next manager be, Fred. But if you search me in there, Mikey Fitzgerald, you'll probably be able to see it. But okay. Yeah, he would definitely be my pick. Also, but you know, I think his contract doesn't end until 2020, so a lot of money would have to be spent to get him. But hey, if Mashiri wants him and is prepared to pay the money, I'd say go get him.
Yeah, maybe. All right, thanks for coming on to the Grand Old Team podcast, Mikey, as ever. Where can people find you on?
Thank you. This is like therapy for me.
Good. Well, I'm glad we've been of service. you've made a fantastic guest again and given us some interesting thoughts and words. Just quickly, where are you on Twitter?
I am at Mike Lovejoy Fitz.
Okay, at Mike Lovejoy Fitz, and then also
all one word
on the forum as well, Mikey Fitzgerald. All right, Mikey, thanks for coming on to the Grand Old Team podcast.
Mikey_Fitzgerald.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Once again, remember we are sponsored by Beast Gear, so head over to their website and check them out, and use the code Toffees10, and you can get some money off some workout gear. Remember to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. And finally, if you haven't already, head over to www.grandoldteam.com/forum and sign up to the forum and get involved on there. Next time, I'll see you next time on the Grand Old Team podcast. I'm Adam Partington. All the best.
It's a grand old team to play for. It's a grand old team to support. And it, you know, your history.